Dr. Daniel Payne will be discussing the rotavirus vaccine. He's an epidemiologist working on acute gastroenteritis in the Division of Viral Diseases, National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases. He received an MPH, MSPH, University of Alabama, 1994, then spent some time working in Bangladesh, returned, got his PhD in Tulane, joined CDC in 2002 in Division of Viral Diseases in 2006, and has been working on rotavirus and other aspects of acute viral gastroenteritis. Dr. Payne?
Thank you, Larry. Well, good morning. I think that the first thing that we can mention for rotavirus vaccines and the experience of the last two or three years is something that we can borrow from Dr. Shugart's presentation, the theme on the prefix RE. And I think that I would say that this has been a really remarkable couple of years, and it's really exciting to be able to present this to you. It's a lot of good news and a lot of new questions as well. Doesn't that always seem to go along with the good news? Today's talk is a brief introduction, and then also we'll go into some of the data on the safety and effectiveness of the current vaccines. And then the meat of the presentation will be on the post-licensure impact of the vaccines, the epidemiological implications of some of the findings, and as well a few slides on the global perspective of what we're finding. Okay, so pretty much everyone knows what rotavirus is. It's rotavirus gastroenteritis, and you have your typical diarrhea, vomiting, and usually fever that go on for several days, and it becomes a dehydrating, electrolyte depleting experience for the child. What we recently found, though, was that others in 2007 revealed that about 90% of those kids with rotavirus also have viremia. So this is much more than just your typical gastroenteritis. It is actually a systemic illness in most cases, and the rotavirus vaccine, at least in some laboratories, have been found to replicate in almost all organs. I believe that the only one that's not covered is in the bladder, but you know, you have the brain, kidneys, liver, everything else. So what we have here is some additional rationale for why we see so many complications, severe morbidities, and around the world we see plenty of deaths, and we'll talk about that. The epidemiology of rotavirus is that almost everyone gets it, so that's pretty easy right off the bat. Between the ages of 3 and 5, you can find that almost everyone in the world has had a first rotavirus infection at least. It's a democratic virus. It hits everyone regardless of their hygienic situations, their socioeconomics, their sanitation of their communities, and everything else. So it's also the highest rates of disease occur between 6 months and 24 months of age, starting just after maternal antibodies start to wane. And importantly, the first infections are most severe. And that's important because this is the concept behind the vaccines that are now approved and being used in the United States and around the world. The natural infection confers immunity against subsequent severe reinfection. So while the first infection naturally is the most severe, subsequent infections are you typically very much reduced in severity to the point where as adults we also are getting rotavirus challenges, and typically we are finding that to be an asymptomatic infection. So the vaccines were designed to mimic that first protective or that first infection and to protect against the severe illnesses that are usually found with that first infection, and then they don't cause the severe illness that usually accompanies that in a wild type infection. The worldwide distribution of rotavirus is really important. It accounts for more deaths than measles worldwide. About 5% of all children who die before their fifth birthday are dying of rotavirus, and this is 500,000 children each year under the age of 5. And so that breaks down to about 1,500 kids dying of rotavirus each day. Okay, so before the licensure and use of the rotavirus vaccines now on the market, rotavirus seasonality was very consistent. And in fact, if you look back at textbooks, medical textbooks from 75, 100 years ago, you would see that there's something called winter gastroenteritis that was identified with children. And so it's been known that this is a very, you know, seasonal epidemic in the United States especially, and the seasonality is very consistent in the pre-licensure period. We're going to talk about what happened to that seasonality since the licensure of the vaccines. Two of these vaccines are currently on the market in the United States. Rotatec, made by Merck, was licensed in February of 2006, and that was approved by the Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices in 2006, and it's a three-dose vaccine, and it's pentavalent. You see the serotypes there that it directly covers. And Rotarix is made by GlaxoSmithKline Biologicals. It's a monovalent vaccine, licensure in 08, very recent, and it's a two-dose course. And both of these are live attenuated oral vaccines. And what's most important is, even though you see that these are the direct antigens that are targeted, there's a great degree of heterotypic immunity against other strains as well that has been documented. The vaccines, and I've combined them here because there's never been a head-to-head trial with these two vaccines, and the U.S. ACIP has no preference for either one. So it, in many ways, it has aggregated them as both being highly effective and very safe. So in very large multinational clinical trials, there's between 90 and 100% effectiveness against severe rotavirus gastroenteritis found, and between 74 and 85% effectiveness against any severity rotavirus. Interesting, the post-licensure case control studies of the U.S. that really mainly were conducted last year, so these are late-breaking studies. I don't think that any of the ones I've listed here have actually been published yet. They're not in print. I know that the first two, I believe they're being presented at NIC this week, so I'm not going to go into great detail about that. But they were both the Texas and the New York case control studies of post-licensure vaccine effectiveness were presented to ACIP in October 2008. The New Vaccine Surveillance Network, that's one where I am the project officer for, that is also, we're preparing our manuscript with our vaccine effectiveness case control studies. And what I wanted to say was that what we're finding is vaccine effectiveness against medically attended rotavirus, ED or hospital attendees, these are between 79 and 89% effective. So the vaccines are 79 to 89% effective against medically attended rotavirus gastroenteritis. And it's fairly consistent across all of these studies. So that's very important news. It's these are effective vaccines. The really interesting stuff now is looking into the post-licensure surveillance, and we are actively monitoring changes in the seasonality of the disease, the incidence, and the medically attended disease rates. Additionally, some epidemiological components of the age distribution, looking at changes in that serotype distribution. Pekka mentioned quite a bit with pneumococcal, and we're looking at that very closely as well. And also some intriguing findings with herd immunity, or what we believe may be herd immunity. And Dr. Ashoka did show this slide. I'll go into it just a little bit further. These are these are 33 labs that have regularly, continuously reported to CDC with their rotavirus test results by EIA for the last 18 years. You're going to see here, these are the pre-licensure years of the weeks of onset of the annual rotavirus epidemic in the United States, based on these labs. So you can see that between week 41 and 51, that's typically when we had onset of rotavirus in this country. Last year, 2007 and the winter of 2008, this was a substantially delayed and diminished rotavirus season. It is delayed by I believe 12 weeks, at least, and it was the overall season for rotavirus was shortened by half. You can see it's substantially below the dotted lines, and those represent the minimum and maximum averages for the rotavirus positivity test. Now you can see for this year, the 2008-2009, this is when we saw just in the second week of January, we saw the onset of the rotavirus epidemic. So it is again changing, and so it poses really interesting questions. That's the red line. You can also very distinctly see that it's higher than it was last year, even though uptake of the vaccine is also presumably increased since last year. And so we will discuss some of those implications. It is still below the typical minimum period or minimum average for rotavirus detection that had been seen historically for the prior 15 years of pre-licensure. Yes? No, actually, and I don't have that on the slide, but the proportion of tests has remained remarkably similar, and we even perhaps were thinking that it was in the last year that some providers were actually asking for more rotavirus tests because they wanted to feel out what was happening in their clientele, so their patients. So it does not appear to be a function of that. Right. So, yeah, that's true. And what we're finding, though, is that, with the folks who are doing the nerves research are not saying that that is a function of what we're seeing this year. The peak week traditionally has been around week 9 or 10. And last year, we found that it was way delayed. It was back into April, almost May. Okay. So looking at another surveillance system, this is the New Vaccine Surveillance Network. And you can see in blue, that's the pre-licensure year, 2006. Red is the first year post-licensure. And then this year, 2008, this past winter, in yellow, and you can again see, these are rates, but you can again see that the seasonality of the yearly epidemic appears to be very much changed. And in fact, we saw upticks in early summer, when normally that would have been the end of the rotavirus season. Okay, we also have seen the rates go down. You can have, again, Vaccine Surveillance Network data here. You can see that in 2006, 51% of our samples from January to April were positive by EIA. In 2007, a similar proportion were positive. And then in 2008, only 6% were positive by EIA. And we had, this is again, and this goes to your question earlier, this is consistent surveillance methodologies. There's no change to the methodology. And in fact, we had very, very interesting results with that. And it represents about an 85% decline. This again, and this is, we're hoping to show this in an upcoming work that we're doing. This can also, another way of demonstrating the incredible declines that we saw in 2008. And you can see again for both hospitalizations and ED visits for rotavirus, the decline was about 85%. And this, there was a series of presentations made at ICAC IDSA last fall. And so these are all cited below at the bottom of the slide. But you can see that what we found in NVSN and NERVS was found throughout the country in various sentinel networks. So typically 85% to 95% reductions in rotavirus cases versus previous years. Okay, so what are some of the epidemiological implications of these really dramatic and sudden changes in rotavirus? And one thing that we're monitoring very closely is the age redistribution, possibly. And the question, of course, has been, will severe rotavirus infections be deferred to older ages? And this is something where, there have been prior diseases where vaccine introduction led to some interesting age dynamics, and one of them is varicella. So what we would assume here is that the children who, in 2008, who did not get vaccinated. However, there was this reduced transmission in the communities, and so they missed natural infections that they normally would have gotten in a pre-licensure environment. However, here it is 1 year later, and they are still immunologically susceptible to rotavirus, and they're just waiting for that exposure to hit them, and now they are restricted from getting rotavirus vaccine due to age restrictions. So they're just, in a way, sitting ducks for their next exposure. What we saw in the pre-licensure period in NVSN was that the average age of a medically attended rotavirus case was 13.6 months. Just through mid-February of this year, that has we've seen some pretty remarkable increases in that age, almost 4 months older this year. So the kids are about, on average, 4 months older this year. And it was very interesting that we found this, because last year NIH presented some modeling activities that did show that at a 60% vaccine coverage uptake of rotavirus vaccines, that the age of severe rotavirus disease would move, would increase by 4 months. And that's almost exactly what we're seeing so far. Another implication that we're monitoring is strain replacement. And one hypothesis that we've covered in the pneumococcal presentation is that, you know, is there a strain not covered in the current vaccines that will emerge to fill that niche, some kind of natural adaptation? And we do know that the current vaccines have very good heterotypic immunity, even beyond the specific antigens that I mentioned early in the slide presentation. We're covering this in the new vaccine surveillance network. And what we have in the top pie charts of three population-based sites is a very consistent G1P8 representativeness in all three sites. And that was really almost with no vaccine coverage in 2006. In 2007, we had about a 31% vaccine coverage with greater than or equal to one dose. A full course of vaccine in 2007 we saw was about 15% uptake. And we saw pretty wild and dramatic variations, even at that very, very low level of vaccine coverage. So you can see in red, that is a globally uncommon strain, G12P8. And it basically predominated the market in Rochester, New York in 2007. And it didn't just emerge, it really dominated the rotavirus epidemic in that county in population-based surveillance. First, and you know, your initial take is that, oh, you know, there's some connection. Since then, in 2008 and also early 2009, we have seen that it has changed yet again in many different ways, and that data is not yet fully prepared. But what we suppose is happening is just natural variability of the rotavirus, and that this is not related to any kind of strain replacement. That's our current hypothesis now. Herd immunity for rotavirus, we reported that back in April of 2008, only 7 weeks after the end of the US rotavirus season. We were finding very, very interesting findings. The level of vaccine coverage did not match the level of reduced disease incidence and reduced disease rates for rotavirus. In fact, they were way off. So, you know, the first thing you think about is herd immunity. And this was never predicted in the clinical trials. The clinical trials never specifically studied herd immunity due to rotavirus vaccination. So we are continuing to wonder whether or not we really did see herd immunity. And if so, what was the mechanism? Was it sibling protection? You can see here, this is an earlier slide that we saw. In 2008, we only had 56% coverage with greater than or equal to one rotavirus vaccine dose. However, the reduction in disease rate here was 85%. So we're left wondering, you know, is that really all that excess impact, is that really all due to rotavirus vaccine? Some of it very well may be, and there may be sibling protection, there may be other kinds of protections from changes in the transmission patterns. But we are under a great amount of interest here to study this further, especially because this year we've had a little bit of a different season already. After big changes in 2008, we saw that the peak that had been achieved in mid to late April was actually surpassed in mid-February. So we are seeing more rotavirus now than we did last year, even though we presume that the vaccination rates have gone up. Again, the current theory here that we're working on is that these are kids who were not vaccinated in the early outset of the vaccine program. They remain susceptible immunologically, and they're merely having some degree of catch-up disease, although we're studying that further. Quickly, I wanted to mention just one or two things on global issues. What if the world was resized in proportion to diarrheal deaths? And, you know, it would make the United States look pretty thin. 90% of the rotavirus deaths in the world occur in Asia and Africa. You can see it's a huge burden in many of the developing countries. And we currently have excellent surveillance networks in a number of countries. There are currently almost 200 countries worldwide that have licensed and are using one of the two vaccines currently on the market. So you can see here that we have a great degree of surveillance already in place, monitoring the baseline data and also any of the issues that we've mentioned today, including serotype replacement, age distributions, and so on. And this is a great time to be talking about this, because at the end of, or actually next week, the WHO will be making some very important considerations on an international recommendation of the two rotavirus vaccines. Currently, there is no recommendation for these vaccines to be used by WHO in Africa or Asia, where we just saw 90% of the true mortality burden exists. So it would be very significant if WHO made that international recommendation. And I don't know how I'm doing on time, but these are some of the questions that we expect to be raised at this WHO meeting next week. And so that's really all I have, and we can open up for questions. There's my email if you have any further correspondence.
Thank you, Dr. Payne. Dr. Payne's presentation is now open for questions. And again, please come to the microphone for questions. Dan, is there any evidence of waning immunity in rotavirus? Actually, it's a question for you, Heck, as well. As you change transmission patterns, will waning immunity come into play in efficacy of prevention in future years as the vaccine is used longer periods of time?
Yeah, that's a very good question, Larry. And, you know, with waning immunity, the vaccines have been on the market for such a brief amount of time that we currently don't have data indicating any waning per se, but I know that there was recently a study published by Vesa Carey that did look at that from a clinical perspective, and over 2 years' time did not find any evidence of waning immunity. That is something that we are looking at closely, and of course it will be related to any kind of age redistributions that we can see. Fortunately, at least with the new vaccine surveillance network, we're able to go back and see those kids who do pick up the disease at later ages to see if they were vaccinated. And if we start to see some trends, then we would go into that further.
One more question. Or we can take two, probably. Go ahead.
Chris Zimmerman from New York City Department of Health. With the data you have for this season, which seems to be some uptick in disease relative to last, do you have any data so far on disease severity between last season and this? Has there been a change in severity, even if we might be seeing an increase in disease incidence?
That's an excellent question. And we have looked at that. And of course, we are in, typically this is the midstream of a rotavirus epidemic season in March. And so we looked at data from January and into February, and we looked at both the ages and also the severity that were of these kids who were coming in to the new vaccine surveillance network. And it did not appear that the symptomology had changed. It was very much consistent proportionally from the 2006 pre-licensure era to the current 2009 cases, although the sample size was indeed smaller. So no indication yet of any severity changes.
Okay. Dr. Ward.
Sorry, you said you looked at age for the cases this year. Are there any differences age this year compared to last year?
Compared to last year, yeah, they are older than last year. So we are, and that does go in tandem with this philosophy that perhaps these are just kids, or many of these are kids who failed to be vaccinated due to the very strict age recommendations on the rotavirus vaccination ages. They were not eligible for further vaccine, so they remained susceptible into this year, and slight changes in transmission may have occurred and they were exposed. So we believe that some of those older kids are simply probably catch-up cases that would have normally been infected last year.
And Dan, it's Greg Armstrong from CDC. A follow-up question to that. You know, with varicella, when the vaccine was introduced, there was some concern that it might increase the burden of disease in older kids, and it actually didn't. It reduced it, but not as much as it reduced the burden of disease in young children. So the average age of infection actually did go up, but it wasn't because of a bigger burden of disease in the older kids. So have you looked at the data yet to see what's actually happening with those older children who are getting rotavirus? Is the incidence going down in those kids?
Well, we didn't look at that in the 2009 season thus far, but we did look at that in 2008. And the incidence for the kids who were about 2 to 3 years old, who were actually ineligible for vaccination, dropped through the floorboards. I mean, it was very, very significant, the declines in the older kids, as well as the kids who are actually receiving vaccine. One belief, and this was at least posed through New York City's study, was that may be sibling protection, some kind of sibling mechanism of protection there.
And have you had a chance to look at it this year? I believe this year is the year where you've actually seen an increase in the average age of infection.
Yeah, we haven't looked at it in great detail this year. And when we look at vaccine failures that have occurred, and there aren't that many, but there are a few, it looks like they are all over the age spectrum. So we're still looking at that very closely. We just don't have a whole lot of data quite yet assembled to do a formal analysis. But thank you.
And last, I'd like to again thank Dr. Nuarte and Dr. Payne and the audience for a really excellent session. Thank you. Enjoy the meeting.